Cleveland! This is for you!
Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. Normally, I've got John English, the Germs guy, alongside. Not tonight. John is out gallivanting around town, painting the town red. All right, maybe that's too much information. But he's out having fun and birthday partying without Devin and me. Devin, seriously, he didn't invite us to his birthday party. He's out.
It's his party. He can cry if he wants to.
Oh, seriously?
It's his birthday. You're going to pick on a guy on his birthday?
I know, but you just brought in an old classic song. Nice job.
I know. I'm sorry.
But seriously, John, everybody who's listening to this, when you do finally listen, it was John's birthday yesterday or whenever you're listening, it was Tuesday. If you get a chance, go out, wish him a happy birthday. Tell him how much you love him and how much you missed him this week, because I know we all missed him, and Devin and I already miss him. So it's all good.
Well, to be honest, I think John's the one that's missing, because we have a guest.
Yes, we do. John is definitely missing out this week. Just a little background. We've gotten a little Twitter ball group together, and we've been playing on a weekly basis on weekends. And this guy we've been hooping it up with. And to be honest, this goes back even before then. This guy is a fantastic writer, big basketball fan, knows his basketball really well. Guys, Greg Foster from Purple and Blues is joining us tonight, and we've got a packed show. It's going to be awesome. Greg, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I need to clarify that I am not the Greg Foster, because that happens. I go anywhere in Utah, is that there's that automatic asking or like wondering if we're related or not. Totally circumstantial.
Wait a minute. Also, you're not the Greg Foster?
Not. He's better at throat slashing. I'm a better rebounder.
And he's a fiery redhead. And dude, you're far from fiery redhead.
True. Although we both lived in Philly at the same time. I was writing for an ad agency, and he was the Sixers assistant coach. So,
well, hey, there's something
little cross country connection there. I would also never go to Fresno State.
No, sir. Yeah, you're okay. So yes, he's not a baller, former baller with the Utah Jazz people, just so you know. Greg Foster, this is a different one, but he can ball though.
He's a washed up pickup baller.
Oh, that's all right. You beat everybody else on the floor, so let's be real here. But but also, like I said, guys, Purple and Blues, I've been reading Greg's stuff for a couple of years now. Great writer. You really are, dude. I enjoy reading your stuff every time. So
that's super kind of you. I've taken a little bit of a sabbatical, had some other stuff, just personal stuff going, but I'm definitely planning on joining back up as soon as the season kicks off in late October.
Well, you know, we got summer league coming up here next week, and then we got fall camp starts at the end of August. But yeah, we're talking mid October is or second week, first week of October is preseason.
And I got my tickets. I'm staying in this next weekend. I was planning on going to St. George, decided not to, and I'm planning on being there all 3 days. So there might be a little something I need to write, get out of my system. Well, about, because I'm really high and really excited about this Jazz team coming into next season.
Well, you should. After summer league, you should pop something out there, just some thoughts maybe on summer league. I don't know, but there is a couple of our listeners that I know of that are going to be at summer league. Folks, if you're listening, hit us up, hit Greg up, hit myself up. We're going to be there. Maybe we'll have to meet up, do a tweet up at the game for everybody to say hi or something. So,
for it, man, let's send out some tweets. We can have a drink. We can, you know, you can do whatever. I just want to watch. I want to watch some good basketball. I'm super intrigued by watching Ben Simmons for the Sixers play. I really wish Embiid was playing for the Sixers. Same thing goes for Exum. But I'm also interested to see how Lyles does in his second year. He looked fabulous during last summer league. And that's really when my interest peaked on him, was actually seeing him live and seeing just the feel he had for the game. And that ultimately transferred later in the season for the Jazz and paid dividends. And I really want to see if he's made any strides over the summer, which I assume he has.
I expect he will have, because you talk about that excitement we had last summer. He got a substantial number of minutes this season with the injuries to Favors and injury to Gobert. I really think that when you put him against the summer league guys, we're talking rookies, second year players, really some deep bench guys and people who are trying to make a squad, this really could be his moment to shine.
I think so. Especially you think, like, a lot of these guys come a week after summer league are going to be tightening up their aprons at Home Depot. Lyles last year, he really proved that he belongs in the NBA, and he's got a super high ceiling, and he's kind of that prototypical stretch four that has become so coveted in the NBA. He's a Lamar Odom, Draymond Green, at least in that ability to shoot and play make and stretch the four. Reminds me a little bit of Detlef Schrempf back in the day.
Yes.
And that do-it-all combo forward. And I think especially with this addition of George Hill, it would not surprise me if they slid Lyles to the five at times and did a super small ball lineup with Hayward at the four and then running some sort of combination of the triple wing. He's that kind of a player and has that kind of diversity to his game.
Yes, I agree. And he plays really, he showed that he can play really well and be patient off the ball too. He's not one that is going to stand in one place. He usually moves pretty well without the ball. And when he gets the ball, he looks to make the right basketball move. So I'm with you. I'm excited to see what he's going to bring. My concern with him going forward is the sophomore slump. Every player in the NBA goes through some sort of a sophomore slump. So you can almost expect that, but if he can focus right, that may be a minimal slump, really.
Well, and I think we saw this last year, and I would bet the farm that Lyles takes over Trevor Booker's backup minutes next year, because he's just flat out a better player and a better fit on this team. I really like Trevor Booker. I love the energy he brings. I love the fieriness. But the fact of the matter is, Trey Lyles is a better basketball player than Trevor Booker. And with that, you saw this last year with Rodney Hood and Rudy Gobert, about two-thirds of the way through the season, they hit that wall because they never started an entire NBA season before. And I don't think that they were fully ready. And I don't even know how you would go about preparing for something like that. Because 82 games, when you're playing 30 minutes a game, like, that's such a marathon. So I'm thinking maybe Lyles has that happened to him, but my fingers are crossed hoping it doesn't, and that he is fully ready and he comprehends that his level of responsibility is going to be elevated.
No, I agree. I couldn't have said it better myself. So switching gears just a little bit, let's go back over the last week. There's been a lot that's gone on with the Utah Jazz. Starting with the trade the day before the draft for George Hill, and then the draft. So the Jazz go out, they draft two point guards and Joel Ballenboy, a big man, in the second round, late second round. Jazz guard count is up to seven now, and then you add Ballenboy. Your thoughts, first of all, how did you feel about that George Hill trade?
It's probably my favorite trade since the Jazz acquired Jeff Hornacek. I don't mean that hyperbolically. Like, I mean that realistically. I was over the moon excited. I don't think there was a guy in the draft that the Jazz could have gotten that is anywhere near the player that George Hill is. He fills an enormous void. He's coming in. He's the best point guard the Jazz have had since Deron Williams. Now, I don't think he's as good as Deron Williams was in his prime, but I think even people in Indiana severely underrated this guy's talent. I don't think he was really usually. And George Hill is a really good point guard. He's not I wouldn't put him in that, like, that A division, which I think is reserved for Steph Curry, Chris Paul, and Kyrie Irving, and Kyle Lowry, and John Wall. I don't think he's in that tier, but he's probably in that B tier, which is exactly what the Jazz need. It's going to allow Dante Exum time to knock the rust off. It also gives him somebody he can learn from and kind of pattern his game after. And I feel like he's just a wonderful fit for this team. He's a defensive first guy. He's like a career 41% three-point shooter, or somewhere around the range of 40%. So he can stretch a defense. He's a decent passer. He's a playmaker. He's a guy who can really penetrate and get into the paint and dish. And when you pair him with shooters like Rodney Hood and Gordon Hayward, he's going to take so much pressure off of them. And I'm excited to see what he can do working with Favors and Gobert in a pick and roll game.
No, you know, and the thing was, is I looked at this trade, a couple of things. First of all, and you guys can agree with me or not here, and maybe you guys can back me up on this. The Jazz coming out of the season had some needs. One need was adding veteran leadership, okay?
Yep.
Another need was adding depth, and I would go as far as to say veteran depth. Another need was to add more three-point shooting, okay? The George Hill move, for those people, and I know there were a few people that were kind of meh or unhappy about it, but for those who were, may I point out that George Hill fills all three of those needs. Now, exactly. Does he fill them? He doesn't fill them by himself. The Jazz need more. And mm-hmm. and at the end of the season locker room cleanout, Dennis Lindsay admitted to the fact that they probably bent on the youth way more than they should have, and they should have gone after a veteran. He made that first step. There's more to come this offseason because I think there will be more moves. We'll get to that in a minute. But he fills those needs right now. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another thing we haven't talked about. What's the number one goal for this Jazz this next season?
Playoffs, I have to think.
Making the playoffs, absolutely. George Hill is a guy who has 70-plus game experience in the playoffs. This is a guy who started for a team that played in the Eastern Conference Finals. This guy has been there. You know, we always talk about the Jazz having, like, they need to get that act like they've been there kind of attitude. We saw so many times where the youth and the inexperience kicked in and they just crumbled late in games. And when you get a guy like George Hill, who's been in those big moments, it helps to eradicate and exercise those demons.
Oh, and by the way, if everybody only looks at Indiana, you're missing one thing. He's got another thing on his resume. He played under a certain coach by the name of Greg Popovich.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought up the playoffs, because correct me if I'm wrong, but last season, Trevor Booker was the most or the only experienced playoff player that we had.
Yeah, I mean, Gordon Hayward was on that Al Jefferson team that got swept, the sweep team.
Yeah.
And Mac played on the Atlanta team last year that went to the playoffs, deep in the playoffs. So,
but yes. How much did he play in that?
This is a guy that's getting 30 to 40 minutes a game on a playoff contender.
Yep. Absolutely. So
this is a guy, he's been there before, and that's the kind of guy that the Jazz need.
I agree. And like I said, he'll bring the veteran leadership. And then, oh, by the way, like you said, he shoots the three really well, but he's not just it's spot up threes. If I remember correctly, I read a guy who writes for a Pacers site who wrote about George Hill and said that this guy from spot up range, not just your any given three, but spot up three range, was shooting 41%. Those are big numbers for a guy like that. And if anything, it opens the lane for Gordon Hayward, who I thought drew a magnificent amount of attention going into the lane last year.
Oh, yeah.
You now throw George Hill into the mix and he hits a couple of threes and suddenly guys have to go out and guard him. And it just opens it up for Gordon in the middle a little more too.
Yeah. I mean this just wholeheartedly, that there wasn't very much or as competition wise with Gordon Hayward in regards to responsibility throughout the entire NBA. Like there was hardly a person in the NBA who had more responsibility than Gordon Hayward with the Jazz last season. There were so many times that he was asked to bail them out, and he was guarding the best player on the other team and was asked to score 20 points per game. And when you have that much responsibility on a single guy, it makes it super easy for the other team to key in on their defense and simply point the finger at Gordon and say, your responsibility is to stop that guy. Because if you stop him, the rest of that team doesn't have what it takes to compete with us. And George Hill adds an element where he's gonna take so much of that pressure away from Gordon. And it's only going to help so much. He's not a super huge assist guy, but he can get assists, but he's just another playmaker, which is the way the league is trending. You need more guys who can make plays.
Well, and you don't, you know, I know everybody got spoiled with John. Everybody got spoiled with Darren. The way of the NBA, even with the Jazz, you don't need a 10 assist a night point guard anymore. It's just not going to work. Not with the mobility and fluidness and positionless style of basketball that a lot of the NBA plays, including the Jazz now. I mean, you look at the Warriors. I mean, Steph had 6-7 assists a game, but even then Draymond had a lot of assists.
I believe Draymond led that team in assists. And how many triple doubles did he have? And
right.
When you see a really good model of Quinn Snyder's flex offense and that motion, that's exactly what the offense is predicated upon. It's based on ball movement and crisp passing and cutting and every single player being able to make some sort of play, whether it's Derek Favors passing out of the post or somebody running a pick and roll or finding an open guy on a kick out to a three. Like there's so many different ways to move. And Hill adds another element where that motion offense is going to be even more fluid and being able to run even crisper.
One of the things I really like about this trade, well, actually two things. One thing I really like is the defense that Hill mm-hmm. brings and the size, because you talk about his length and Dante's length, Gordon, Rudy, Derek. You have so many elite defenders on this team. It kind of reminds me back to, I want to say Boston when they had their big three.
And then Rondo.
And it was just defense.
Right. Well, and I was going to say, even look at George Hill. I don't know if anybody's noticed his wingspan. When somebody put that number out, I was like, are you kidding me?
It's a 6'9 wingspan for a 6'2 guard.
Yeah, it's incredible.
That's like a mini Pippen out there, wingspan-wise.
I agree. And I'm excited. I'm excited to watch George Hill play next year. I'm excited to what he's going to bring and what the Jazz are going to do. I want to ask you, you know, we talked before we started the show. You and I are kind of in the same boat. We don't watch a lot of college ball, but right. do you have any thoughts on the folks that the Jazz drafted, the final three, and what about the fact that they're heavy on the point guard spots right now? What happens?
Well, I think that we need to rewind the tape back a little bit and talk about something that you already mentioned earlier when we were talking about the draft. Is the Jazz aren't done making moves. Dennis Lindsay's all but come out and said that the Jazz are going to have a busy offseason and they want to acquire veteran leadership and shooting and defense and all the things that the Jazz are predicated on. So I think you're going to see a lot more movement. I think you might see a guy like Alec Burks moved or someone like that.
Please no.
I don't have any resources. This isn't some sort of Woj bomb. But I think you're going to see some of those guys packaged in a deal. The Jazz now have their D-League team playing at Salt Lake Community College with the Stars. You're going to see a lot of those guys kind of draft and stash in the D-League and help them develop. I think that's where you're going to see that that Ballin Boy kid. And maybe something becomes of that. But, you know, when you're drafting guys in the 20s or in the second round, the probability of them being a major contributor is pretty low. but it wouldn't surprise me if they ended up as some sort of trade fodder.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And well, and the thing about, okay, so Joel Bolomboy, I could see them stash him in the D League. The one thing that I think will be nice about him is that he's a guy that even if they do, I think they'll keep him and call him up on a frequent regular basis because, you know, we've got depth at the wing and guard position now. Now you got to work on a little depth at the bigs. And I think Joel Bolomboy might earn himself a spot or two occasionally in a few games. You know, even if it's garbage time, a few times come out on the floor and play. And he might just be a guy that they'll invest a little time in between the D League and between the team. But I'm with you. I think they're going to probably ship a couple of these guys. You mentioned a name that I hope they don't ship. I don't want to see Alec Burks go anywhere because I think he's a nice fit for the team. And I really want to see him healthy because I still have to look back and think if he was healthy this last year, I think the Jazz made the playoffs with him healthy on the team for the whole year. And because I think he offers that serious of a contribution for them. Not only his ability to drive, but let's face it, the guy is still a very good 3-point shooter at 38%, 39% too.
And I think I'm a little worried. I don't even know what his trade value is. And I really hope that he can bounce back from these injuries. The last thing I want to see is Alec bottom out because I think he does have a really, really high season ceiling, and I hope that these injuries haven't stunted his growth. But the realist or the skeptic in me isn't super optimistic about things. The Jazz last season and the little bit that he did play, the Jazz were better with him off the floor. And maybe that is because he hasn't been able to spend a lot of time playing in Quinn's system, and he's probably still trying to find his footing. So I really hope that he's able to bounce back. I'm just a little skeptical at this point.
I'm the same way, though, because I'm an Alec fan. I would like to see him succeed. I do think he has a lot of potential. But honestly, one of the things I was going to mention with this George Hill trade is if you consider the option that bringing in Hill presents in that now you could move Dante to the shooting guard, which I know he says he's a point guard, but you have kind of that flexibility in positions now where he could be playing behind Rodney at the two, or let's say the Jazz go after a free agent that's a three, you could technically slide Gordon down to the shooting guard. You could go without a point guard. This move with George Hill, to me, does give the Jazz some flexibility in making Alec Burks expendable. I'm not saying that's the best move for them, but I could see that happening.
What I do think, okay, and here's my thing. I think there's two players on the team, and I don't think anybody will disagree with one of these. Two players on the team that I think are more expendable than Alec Burks at this point because of the move. Again, you mentioned flexibility. What does every single one of the wings and guards have in common that two of them don't? There are two on this list that are not like any of the rest.
Are you going to attack Joe?
What's that?
There's a couple of them who can shoot.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Here it is. Trey and Mac are pure point guards.
Yep.
Everybody else can play any one of two or three positions. Everybody else. Joe can play two or three. Gordon can play one, two, or three. Alec can play one or two. Hood can play two or three. You know, you've got guys that can move between two and three positions, and you've got Trey and Mac, neither of which are really in a position to do that.
And you could throw Neto in that mix too.
Right. No, I agree. I forgot about Neto. You're right. He's another guy. But it at this point in time, and the thing is Trey Burke and Mac, I mean, let's face it, Mac is on a deal where the Jazz could not even lose money by letting him go before the season starts because he's not guaranteed. And then Trey is on the last year of his deal, which, although it's not extremely attractive, a guy who's dropping off your books is attractive enough to just about any team right now. You would have to think.
But I will say this. I'm going to say this, and I'm not backtracking, but Greg mentioned value, and let me know if you agree or not, Greg. But Alec Burks does not have a lot of trade value right now, in my mind. As we see in the potential there, he's been injured. He's still got a couple years on his deal. I think he signed about $10-11 million a year on that, and he's got, I think, 2 years left. that's really not an attractive contract for a guy that you don't know if he's going to be playing or not. So I don't see the Jazz moving him, at least not right away. If he's healthy and an offer presents itself, maybe. But if he's healthy, the Jazz might say, you know what, this is a risk we're willing to take, and we're going to ride this out till the end.
Yeah, and I actually agree 100%. This is a guy that's missed over 100 games the last two seasons. Yeah, we don't know what his value is, and frankly, we don't know if this guy can stay healthy. He has a very erratic style of play, and so much of his game is based on getting to the rim and being airborne, and that's not conducive to long-term health. And I think there's going to have to be some adapting and some changes to his game in order to maintain some sort of sustainability. So my thing is, I'm happy if Alec can stay healthy and contribute. I would love to see him in a Jazz uniform because he's one of my favorite players on this team. And I don't know if the Jazz have a more electric player on their team. When Alec is on and he's driving and he's being Houdini, he's super fun to watch, and he's a fabulous contributor to the team. I just don't know if that's who we're going to get.
Oh, and by the way, in a league now where there is a sixth man defense on the floor, and that is the baseline, there's one player in the league who uses the defensive baseline against opposing teams better than anybody else.
Yep.
I mean, his ability to drive baseline when teams think they've got him trapped and be able to find a way to finish is unmatched right now.
He's up. I mean, if we're talking, I really, really want to see a layup contest between him and Kyrie Irving.
I think that's fair.
Like, bring out the push brooms, bring out the football pads, and hit those guys and see if they can play some sort of like horse game in layups to see who can hit the crazier stuff, because both of those guys are magic below the rim.
Well, there you
but
go.
To, another part to this whole equation is, if the Jazz can somehow find a package where they ship out Burks and they get a veteran guy to come off the bench, then I'm all for it. But I don't think that you would want to go in all willy-nilly and just package him up for any Joe Schmo.
Right.
If the Jazz can improve by shipping out Alec Burks, I'm all for it. I'd be a little bummed because I like the guy.
Right.
But ultimately, I think we can all agree that we want to see the Jazz become more competitive and become a better team. And if the Jazz can become a better team by moving Alec Burks, then you get 100 million thumbs up from me.
Right. All right. So
I want to talk about another player real quick. I'm going to throw some stats out, and I just want to know what you guys think about this person. If he were suiting up for the Jazz, 6'9", about 225.
That's a big boy.
Played 32 minutes a game. Averaged 17 points. Shot 55% on scored those 17 on about 10 field goal attempts per game. Rebounding, let me find those stats really quickly. Averaged about 12 rebounds a game.
17 and 12 at 55%.
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about the guy the Jazz drafted in the second round.
Ballin' Boy. Okay.
Those are his college stats.
Well, he shot the three really well, too, if I remember correctly. What was his percentage from downtown?
I don't think he did.
I thought he shot pretty well from downtown.
34%.
That's not bad for a big man, though.
Right.
Yeah, but you have to consider, in the NBA, he's shooting 3 feet behind where he was shooting in college.
And exactly. That percentage,
yeah. Unless you shove him into a corner three situation, and maybe that's just the perfect spot, because that corner three is where it's the shortest point on the 3-point line on the floor.
So he becomes Serge Ibaka?
Why not, right?
I mean, I'm all for it if the guy can become of it. But I mean, if he's 17, 12, and 55, I'm all for it, man. I think that's great. And if he can, and the little bit that I've read about him is that he's a super aggressive, high energy guy.
Exactly.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the comparison that I've heard a lot is he's a poor man's Kenneth Faried.
I haven't watched him play, so and I don't know, Devin, whether you can say that or not, but any of our listeners that listen, maybe they can tell us. I mean, I think I know Chappie would know too. There's a few guys that have watched him religiously that watch Weber State ball that can probably answer that better than anybody. But I would have to say that's not a bad comparison, maybe.
I don't think it's a bad comparison. One that I've heard thrown out, and I have to be honest, I did not watch a lot of college ball. I did not watch a lot of Weber State. I did go see him a time or two up at the D, and he did play very well when I was there. But the comp I've heard some Jazz fans throw around is Paul Millsap. And I think that is just the rebounder, the high motor guy. But he's longer than Millsap, though. Right. I can see him coming in and kind of just giving that role to Lyles and taking that backseat, almost like if Lyles and Booker switched spots, and then you just took Booker out and inserted Ballenboy there. I think he'll be a good fit.
Well, that'll be the case because Booker's not coming back anyway. So
right. We don't know.
I don't think the Jazz will bring him back.
But here's
I'm in that same boat. I think Booker's gone. I wish him incredibly well. I hope wherever he lands, he's super successful. But ultimately, the Jazz can do better than Booker.
I agree.
I think they can find someone.
Well, hello there.
And the wife crashes the party.
I agree to more Haywards.
You what?
Yeah. He says that the Jazz should get more Haywards. We're just going to clone Hayward, and we're going to have a whole squad of Gordon Haywards.
All right, that's it. Wrap up the show. We're done. Get more Haywards. That's it. Thanks for joining us on. No.
we'd have a really good team, but my concern with that is then the whole team would leave in free agency.
Oh.
Could you imagine Jazz Twitter if we had five Gordon Haywards? I know this is a ridiculous hypothetical situation, but I think that we would see like the internet enter some sort of apocalypse from the hot takes of Jazz Nation.
And there would probably be a lot of blocks, a lot of Twitter sides, a lot of people that just like, to hell with it, I'm gone.
And there would be so many side part haircuts across.
whoa, hey. You leave my hair alone.
I had that haircut for a while.
All right, before we could go on this all night, but I want to switch gears because I want to talk about the next two topics I want to talk about. I've been kind of excited too because Devin and I have been like chomping at the bit over this and having you on. I know your thoughts on this, so we want to jump into this. Let's go to the NBA Finals for a moment.
Yeah.
What? Give me your initial thoughts on that 7-game series that we witnessed.
That, you know, outside of Jordan getting called for an offensive foul in game 6 in 98, that was the most satisfying thing I've seen in an NBA Finals. I thought it was incredible. I tweeted out right after the Cavaliers won that we just witnessed the real life Rocky IV.
Wow.
You had a guy who's representing his hometown, just like Rocky was in Philly, and he was the American guy, and he goes over in enemy territory and knocks out Ivan Drago in Russia and wins over everyone in this incomparable bout that nobody thought he had any sort of chance to win. And I think there are a lot of parallels with that in this finals. I think everybody, after game 4, when Cleveland lost at home and the Warriors went up 3-1, I remember looking at my wife and I said, well, this is kind of disappointing. Like, I thought they'd at least get two. You know, LeBron won two by himself last year. And I think everybody in the world outside of the Cleveland Cavaliers wrote them off.
Not me.
This incredible, just unfathomable comeback. And I loved every second of it. It was amazing to me.
I'll have you know that before the season started, we had our preseason predictions. John, myself, and Devin, all three of us picked the Cavaliers to win. We picked different we picked different teams they were going to play against, but all three of us picked the Cavs to win.
And I said that too. I picked the Cavaliers in my purple and blues prediction.
Yes, you did. I remember that.
I kind of reneged on it after 3-1. I didn't see anybody, especially after the Warriors came back against Oklahoma City and Clay went nuclear in game six and hit, I don't know, 500,000 threes. I thought there was no way the Cavaliers were going to be able to stop that juggernaut. Well, and they did.
And I'll tell you this. I never once reneged on my prediction. Never once. And Devin is my witness. I never did. We got to the finals, and after 3-1, I thought, you know what? There's still a chance. This is still LeBron we're talking about. And if you give a window, you're done. And that window was given in game five when Draymond didn't play. And then,
yep.
And then he and Kyrie went off. And then we recorded after game six. And Devin, who did I? Okay, you and John, you said your heart and your head. You called the whole thing. You and John went with it and said Golden State. Who did I say would win after game six? I said, who would win game seven?
You said the Panthers.
Oh, I did not. I said the Cavs.
You said the Cavs.
I picked the Cavs again because, again, I went back to the fact LeBron is something we have never seen. We're going to get to that in a moment, too. But you give him a window, and you are dead in the water. And they gave him a window when Draymond got suspended.
No, they gave him a window when they did the one thing you do not want to do.
Piss him off?
Clay poked the bear.
Oh, yeah, he did. And that was after. Was that after game four when they were up 3-1?
That was Sunday? After game four, because that was before the suspension, and they were talking about Draymond barking at LeBron, and he said, oh, I guess he just got his feelings hurt. And I'm not sure if you saw the tweet that was going around, but there was one that said, nothing was the same after this laugh. And it had LeBron going, Clay said what? And then he giggled. I've never heard LeBron giggle.
It was almost this like supercilious laugh.
Right.
Like almost like incredulous. Like how dare you? And you're right about Clay and the Warriors. That it wasn't just the Warriors, it was the entire Bay Area. It was every single dorky Golden State fan who lives in Silicon Valley and works for whatever metric startup company, drives a Tesla and drinks their Napa Valley Pinot. It was every single one of them poking that bear, and then that bear decided to turn into the bear from The Revenant.
Oh, see, this is where we need John, because you've already brought up two movies in this conversation, and John would totally just eat this alive, because and you already know that we just love our movie talk, but you've brought up The Revenant, you've brought up Rocky IV. We're heading in the right direction. See, this is perfect. No, I'm the same way when I looked at that. I'm like, you can't disrespect the guy. You can't call him out because you're going to regret it. And I know everybody looks back and looks at the narratives and says, well, if Draymond played in game five, well, I don't care. He didn't. And if he did, I would question whether they would have won then too, because LeBron was on a roll.
Not just that, but like, how do you even sleep at night when you're Draymond? And he even came out and said that he was responsible for the Warriors' loss. And it's all because this guy cannot keep his hands off other men's junk. Like, you lost the NBA Finals because you couldn't stop punching people in the crotch.
And he should have been suspended in the series against OKC with Steven Adams.
But here's the thing.
He's a serial crotch puncher.
Here's the thing. If he gets suspended in that Oklahoma City series,
they lose.
They lose.
I don't know.
Yes, they lose. They lose.
They won that next game, did they not, when he was supposed to be suspended?
Or no, they won. Okay, it was in game one and game two. Game one is when he kicked Steven Adams the first time, and he did it again in game two. He should have been suspended after game two, and at that point in time, it was tied 1-1, I thought.
Who won game three?
Yep.
Game three went to Golden State. Was
no,
it?
It didn't.
No, no, it didn't. Oklahoma City won both games at home. OKC won three in a row and went up 3-1. That's what it was. They won three in a row.
It was the first time all year that Golden State had lost three in a row.
Okay. Regardless.
I have a hard time believing that if Draymond's out, especially because Draymond, as good as Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are, both of those guys are Hall of Fame type of players. And Steph Curry, I thought he deserved the MVP this last year. He had just a fabulous season. But let's be honest. Draymond Green is the heart and soul of that Warriors team.
Yeah, he is.
Much like how Trevor Booker was kind of that guy last season for the Jazz. Only difference is Draymond Green is an all NBA type of player. He has the talent to back up all of that boisterousness and the overly aggressive behavior.
Oh, and he is one of two players now. I used to say there was only one, but one of two players now who can legitimately guard five positions on the floor. Do you know who
Draymond's incredible, man?
Yeah,
he's a joy to watch. I love watching him play. A lot of it, like the little bit of basketball I do play, I like to think that I at least do a somewhat of an effort of kind of patterning my game after that in the kind of that do it all, play defense, pass, rebound, shoot.
Yes, you
like,
do.
Draymond Green is kind of the basketball version of the five-tool player in baseball. You know, like kind of like a Mike Trout type who can hit for average, hit for power, can throw fields, can just do it all. And that's who Draymond is. He's wonderful.
And I was gonna say, who's the other player that can play all five positions, guard all five positions on the floor?
Best player since Michael Jordan.
Pretty much.
His name is LeBron James.
Pretty much. You know, back to the seven game series. Like you said, a lot of people had it dead 3-1 and dead in the water, and then we watched a comeback happen, and we watched. I really think. And game seven, that might have been the best, most brilliant, magnificent. You can find all sorts of adjectives to fill in. Best game seven, I think I have ever witnessed in an NBA finals, much as a player. Burns,
man, that was a 12 round heavyweight fight in a phone booth. Every single time the Cavs would pull ahead, the Warriors would answer, and then the Cavs would answer, and it was one counter punch after another, and it was almost poetry.
Well, and then we hit in the second half with 4.5 minutes to go in the game, tied at 89, and we went 3.5 minutes where nobody scored a single point. And I thought, this bodes well, I think, for Cleveland right now. And then it happened. Then it happened, probably a sequence I would never have believed if I hadn't seen it. Kyrie Irving goes in against four tall Warriors into a tree, a mountain of trees, if you will, puts up a layup and misses it. And I thought, okay, that was Cleveland's chance to break the tie and take the lead. And now it's a fast break between Steph Curry and Iguodala. And I thought, you know what? If Iggy makes this layup, it's done. Golden State will take the lead and will not relinquish it. And all of a sudden, LeBron comes from nowhere and blocks it in the most incredible sequence I've ever watched. And I thought, you know what? That's sure willpower by the best in the game.
And not just that, but there is one player in the history of basketball who could make that play. And it just so happened to be the guy who made that play.
Right? No, absolutely. And it's, I think that's where the 89 tie finally broke, because as we know, we go down the next sequence on the floor and Kyrie Irving decides, and this is what I think is so wonderful for Kyrie, the story of Kyrie in Cleveland. It's been so up and down. This was his opportunity at redemption, where he uses a pick, gets Curry on an ISO, and drains a 3-point shot over Curry, and that's your ball game.
And that was what they needed to do. I said that when I was watching the game. I was sitting there watching it with my brother, and he goes, "This is LeBron's game." And I said, "No, I said Kyrie has been the clutch guy down the stretch every time for Cleveland. As much as this has been LeBron's game, Kyrie needs the ball.
And he cooked. Let's be honest. Kyrie spent all seven games cooking Steph Curry.
Yeah, Steph he did.
And let's just call it as it is. Kyrie Irving outplayed the unanimous MVP in that finals. I don't think that's debatable at all.
No.
Kyrie Irving versus Steph Curry in that series, Kyrie Irving was leaps and bounds better than Steph Curry.
Agreed.
And he showed up in the final moments. And I can't overstate how awful Steph Curry was in that fourth quarter. The turnovers, the bad defense, the terrible shots. This is a guy that got locked down by Kevin Love with the game on the line. They're not a single guy in the NBA you'd want to guard Steph Curry less in a pressure situation than Kevin Love, a guy that spent the entire finals getting his head kicked in by the Warriors.
And all of Kevin Love's detractors ate crow in that very sweet sequence.
And I couldn't be happier, man. I like Kevin Love, and I think that he's a good player. I think he's kind of a square peg in a round hole on that Cleveland team. But I was happy for that guy to do what he did in that situation. Like, that's a career defining play for him, and hats off to that dude. But if you're Steph Curry, you got to be sick, man.
I agree.
You have that awful behind the back pass that was just. If you're the unanimous MVP, how do you make a pass that careless in a game that big?
Well, I would say if there's one thing I felt was missing from Game 7, it was Steph Curry, and I wish that was not the case.
17 points.
Yeah, I wish that wasn't the case, because in an all-out brawl like it was, that's the one thing that would have made that game even finer, is having Steph launch and drain some of his patent and threes in that game and get some open looks like he was so good at doing playoffs.
And this is the second straight finals where he's won the regular season MVP and hasn't been anywhere close to the MVP of the series in the finals. And it's really interesting to me. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a rant right now. Just about LeBron, who I think not only is he the greatest player in the game right now, and I think he's one of the top three best players in the history of the game, personally, but there has never been a single player in the history of the NBA who has been more scrutinized than LeBron James. He's held to this impossible standard. And it kind of blew my mind that we don't hold the unanimous back-to-back MVP to that same standard. Like, could you imagine if LeBron played a fourth quarter like Steph Curry did? Like, there would be some sort of, like, mass crucifixion that's aired on CNN in Times Square for this guy. Like, the takes would be so hot that global warming would be pushed up 100 years.
But that's the crazy thing, is how many times we can go back to Miami when in the fourth quarter in a game winning situation, LeBron was under the microscope and scrutinized because he passed to Udonis Haslem for an open shot. Oh, yes, people, I do remember that play, and I do remember that scrutiny. I remember it all. And I have to agree, why do we not hold some of these other great players to the same standard we do LeBron? I know a lot of people are going to say, well, I mean, because LeBron self... You know, I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to say that this guy... People need to appreciate what we're watching here. You know,
absolutely.
I'm going to give props where props is. Steph Curry is magnificent. He is nothing shy of brilliant. I love watching that guy shoot.
He came off the greatest single offensive season in the history of basketball. This is a dude that is redefining basketball. In fact, I was talking to Tony Jones today. He's a good friend of mine. He plays ball with us. He's obviously Salt Lake Tribune beat writer for the Jazz. Fabulous writer, fabulous guy. And I was talking because I was playing a little pickup ball at the gym today with just a couple of high school kids who were there all the time, these little gym rat kids. And it kind of blew my mind that these dudes are better shooting at 25 feet than they are at 5 feet. And that's kind of the, I see that as kind of where the evolution of the game is going. And so much of that is inspired by Steph Curry's greatness, because he is one of those guys. And frankly, if you've got a guy who can shoot like that, a three-point shot is always going to be worth 50% more than a two-point shot. So it's interesting the impact that he's had on the game. And I'm not trying to pile on Steph because he's amazing, but it's just interesting the double standard that we have with LeBron and other stars.
Absolutely.
I can tell you what it is.
The decision?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's the fact that when LeBron James came into the league, he was straight out of high school. He had the reputation of being the second coming of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
When he came into this league, and when he entered, he immediately started living up to that.
Yeah. He turned that Cleveland team around in his first season.
And here's what happens. Okay. That scares people.
Yeah. It
because does. Their hero now has someone. Okay. Well, is there going to be someone better? And so everyone is looking to bring him down a notch. I can tell you with Andrew Wiggins, had Andrew Wiggins come into the league and started to dominate in Minnesota right away, you would have the same thing happening because he had that hype years coming in.
Agreed.
But it's the fact that LeBron did it that scares people, because you look at Steph Curry. Steph Curry got passed over twice.
And if I remember correctly, draft boards early on said, this guy's slow. This guy can't play defense.
Shots.
Yeah, yeah. And Steph Curry came out with a lot of doubters versus LeBron coming into this league with a lot of praise and a lot of
exactly
a lot of the podium talks. No, I agree.
The way you can look at it is, and some people may disagree, Steph Curry in the minds of viewers earned his respect.
Right.
LeBron James had his right from the get-go.
Right.
And I think some people say no. You need to really earn it. And because it doesn't seem like he had to, I think that's why.
Okay, so I've got 2 points to that. And I think you're spot on in regards to him coming out and having all of the hype. And I think that, let's be honest, LeBron has lived up to all the hype. And the thing that's always been really interesting to me about all that scrutiny and the finger pointing and people not liking LeBron because he's chosen one tattoo and crowning himself King James. But we got to talk about his upbringing. Like, there's nothing more American than there's nothing more than people eat up than an underdog story. And there's nobody who's had more of an underdog story than LeBron James.
Yep.
Like, yes, this guy, he won the genetic lottery. Sure. He's a freak. He's Magic Johnson's basketball IQ in
Karl Malone's body.
He's, in my opinion, he's the most physically gifted basketball player in the history of the game. Like, if you had to make a prototype basketball player,
LeBron would be it.
Probably the closest thing that you could get in a real human being. At any rate, this is a kid who grew up fatherless and in extreme poverty. Like, bounced from home to home, slept in cars, like, grew up in the projects, and now is the most famous athlete in the history of the world. How can people not latch on to that? Especially when you compare other superstars, guys like Steph Curry, guys like Klay Thompson, guys like Kobe Bryant.
Who all had parents that played in the NBA.
Played in the NBA. I used to play pickup basketball at Lower Marion High School in Philly, which was about a 10-minute drive from where I lived in Manayunk, which is a little borough about 7 miles outside of the city. And this place, it looked nicer than a lot of independent colleges. Like, this high school, just to give you kind of a local comparison, it looked like a Westminster College. And this is a high school. Like, these are all guys that grew up with millions and millions of dollars. And I think we need to get past this whole Steph Curry, he's an everyman sort of thing. I think that's one of the biggest fallacies in basketball. This is a guy who's 6'3", who's incredibly physically gifted, a guy whose dad was a 3-point shooting champion. Like this, he had access to all of the best trainers, all of the best coaches. Like he's never gone without. And that's not a knock on Curry.
No.
It's just simply who he is. And it's so funny to me that he's the one who gets touted as this everyman. He's earned everything he's got, while LeBron is the spoiled brat. It seems to me that
it's quite the reverse.
Somehow the wires got crossed, and it's just interesting to me.
So what I'm going to do here is I realize, well, let's just take a moment. We've probably lost some listeners right now that are just going, guys, seriously.
I don't care either.
But here's what I want to do. I want to transition for a second because Greg said something a few moments ago, and I want to talk about this for a moment. I've been researching because I want to write something, and I'm still working on it. It's still going to come. The evolution of the NBA, of basketball in the NBA. And there's been some players that have made changes over the years, over the decades, and some of which I never watched. You could go back to Wilt Chamberlain, change the way that you had the guard and play in the paint. I mean, he was a mountain among little men. Okay, and then you fast forward. You know, I want to even go to the 80s. You had Bird and you had Magic. Okay, Magic was a game changer in point guards. He changed the way we viewed the point guard. We viewed the pass. We viewed even Maravich did, really. But then you get to Bird, who was just revolutionary in the way he changed the game and in his shooting style, what he could do. There were so many things he did about the game. Then you went to Michael, and people, Michael changed the game so much as well, so brilliantly in what he could do. And then you get to Kobe and Shaq. Shaq was a game changer because suddenly it changed the way that the NBA was officiated, for that matter. Shaq changed the rules. Then you have Kobe, who we can all love to hate him because we're Jazz fans. We don't like him because he's a Laker, because of what he did to us so many years. You have to recognize greatness. He was good. He was very good. And then you get to LeBron, who has revolutionize the way you play positionless basketball. A player, like you said, is a prototype who could play any position on the floor he wanted to effectively, if not great. And then you have Steph Curry, who's now revolutionizing the game further. A player who could step out into the parking lot, for heaven's sakes, and drop a shot just with this simple ease as he could with a layup. In fact, I dare say he makes the 3-point shot look easier than half of the layups that he takes. Guys, the NBA is constantly revolving.
He finished 70% in the paint or at the rim this year too. Like, the guy's unstoppable offensively.
Yeah. So the NBA is in a constant state of evolution, constantly. Right. And you get all these players that are just so magnificent and brilliant that change the game. And before everybody jumps on their hate of any of these players, please do yourselves a favor. I was young once. I hated Michael Jordan. I was young once. I hated Kobe Bryant. Take a step back. Step away from hate and just watch. Just watch, because seriously, we're watching evolution at its best in the game of basketball, and it's brilliant.
Alan, I want you to remember that statement Saturday morning when you see me and Greg running a pick and roll and just doing the most poetry.
Why you got to ruin the moment like that? Why you got to ruin the moment? Okay, a walk-off bank shot doesn't count from three up for me to watch and think that's beautiful. Okay, I'm not going to.
The walk-off had no bank. There was no bank during the walk-off. Let's get back.
Banks are open on Saturday morning now.
Huh?
I said banks are open Saturday morning now.
Yeah.
This is true. I won't. I this is very true. No, but in all truth, it is magnificent to watch. What we watched in these finals, and that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm giving LeBron love, but I want the listeners listening to know I love watching Steph Curry as much as I do LeBron. Yep. But there is something special to watch about LeBron. I mean, the guy who dominated every single statistic in the NBA Finals. I mean, he led all statistical categories in the NBA Finals. first player in NBA history to do that, by the way.
I want you just to, we want to talk about impact. This guy at Tommy Beer posted this a couple of days ago, and it kind of blew my mind. So this is Klay Thompson and Steph Curry combined in the 2016 finals. Combined had 39 assists, 55 rebounds, 13 steals, and 9 blocks. LeBron James alone in the 2016 finals had 62 assists, 79 rebounds, 18 steals, and 16 blocks. This guy had 23 more assists, 24 more rebounds, 5 more steals, and 7 more blocks than both Klay Thompson and Steph Curry combined. Like, that is impact personified.
I guess he got his feelings hurt.
That's yeah. Yeah, and that's called efficient, you know, there's your analytics, folks. That's efficient basketball right there.
That's video game. That is video game. That is when you turn on the Xbox
and play NBA Jam
2K and you just
put it on rookie mode.
Oh, forget that. I'm just going NBA Jam because he's on fire. I don't care. You can play either game. You're right. That is video game mode. That's ridiculous.
And he shot something like the last 3 games, he shot 55% from the field or something like that, and almost 40% from 3. Like, it was astonishing. Like, back-to-back 41-point games followed by a game 7 triple double.
Yeah, I don't ever want to hear that LeBron is not clutch. When you drop that kind of in 3 elimination games.
Well, okay, so that brings me to my final question on this topic, and then we're going to move on.
Nope.
Yes, we are.
I got one more.
Oh, you got one more? Okay, I got a question, then Devin's got, and then we'll move on. My question is, what does game 7 and the 3-1 comeback do for LeBron's legacy? And I think you've partially already answered this by putting him as one of the 3 greatest players to play the game. But what does this do for his legacy? Because for me, it puts him at the top with Jordan.
Yeah, I'm right there. I think the only 2 players that are in that same pantheon right now, in my opinion, are Michael Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, it's
that's a pretty tall mountain right there.
Yeah, and he's there to lead every single major statistical category for both teams, come down from an unprecedented 3-1 disadvantage, and win in Oracle Arena where they had lost, I think, 5 games all season. Like, the odds for the Cavaliers to win were so slim, and he pulled it off. And I think he's right there. I mean, he came back from 3-1 to beat a 73-win team and a back-to-back MVP to give Cleveland their first championship in over half a century. Just let that soak in.
And he wins finals MVP to cap it off.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Just to me, it's the greatest finals performance of all time.
Well, I'll stop short there because I thought last year's performance was okay. What he did this year, nothing shy of magnificent. He did 2 things no player has ever done in the history of the game. He led all categories and he came back from a 3-1 deficit in the finals.
Yep.
But last year's finals, for those who didn't watch last year's, LeBron was a monster. A pure monster. Say those numbers again.
36, 13, and 9.
Yeah, that was last year.
Yeah, and this, to me, that was like, this was the crescendo on last season. Like, last season, LeBron showed, I thought LeBron deserved MVP even in the loss.
Absolutely.
And I thought he deserved it in the Spurs series. Like, LeBron had something like a 32 PER in that loss against the Spurs. And as brilliant as Kawhi's was about a 24. And granted, the Spurs won and they waxed the Heat. And I don't know. I'm not mad at Kawhi winning. Kawhi is a fabulous player. But every single finals outside of maybe his first when he carried it, the 2007 Cavs, he's been the best player on the floor.
Yeah.
And this to me, this was LeBron's magnum opus.
You know,
he's been that Beethoven kind of player, just that incredible guy. And now he just released his sixth symphony.
Well, and you know what's interesting? I went back and looked at finals over the last 20 years. Okay, there's only been four Game 7 finals. Game 7s in a finals over the last 20 years. Okay, those four were Detroit and San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
The Lakers and Boston.
Uh-huh.
And San Antonio and the Heat, and now the Cavs and the Warriors. Now, there is one other Game 7 performance that I might put close to the level of what we saw from LeBron, and that was Kobe's against that Boston Celtics team. I don't know if anybody remembers. I went back and looked at stats. Kobe shot horribly in that game, and LeBron, let's face it, didn't shoot well in this finals game either.
He was like 9 of 24, but he did everything else.
And Kobe was 6 of 24 in that game, but Kobe did something that really surprised me. Do you realize he grabbed 15 rebounds as a guard in that game? And they went on to beat Boston in a game 7 and win the championship against that. And that was another one of those, you know, 14th round boxing championship moments between the Lakers and the Celtics. That was a duke 'em out, fight 'em out game.
That was the Ron Artest game where Ron Artest went off for like 20 some odd points and hit a bunch of threes.
Yep.
Was kind of the hero. Ron Artest made up for Kobe's absence on the offensive end, but Kobe did everything else.
And that was the game that Boston went without their best center in that game too.
Kendrick Perkins blew his knee out the game before and was out. And I remember seeing that game and the Lakers grabbed just about every single kind of 50-50 rebound. And I don't think that happens if Perkins is in.
No, neither do I.
And Kobe did everything, and Kobe's phenomenal.
And that's
the first guy to meet Kobe, but he's incredible, man. He deserves the accolades he get because he was great.
And that's why I put that game 7 and this game 7 with LeBron on pretty close levels, because I thought we watched something pretty incredible in both cases, in both situations. The difference is this one was on the road in Golden State, and I believe that one was at home in LA.
Yeah, I think you're right. And especially like when you quantify or not quantify, but when you consider that LeBron won twice in Oracle, two out of those three games, like it's just incredible when you think of all of the different elements and all of the variables that went into the Cavaliers winning. And you kind of boil it down and you realize the difficulty. To me, that's unprecedented.
No, I agree.
Like in game 5, to not only drop 41 points, but to have 16 assists and 7 or 16 rebounds and 7 assists to go along with it. Like,
absolutely.
Not a whole lot of players in the history of the game could do something like that.
No, and then he followed it up with a 40-point game the very next game. So.
Yeah, with like 12 assists and 7 or 8 rebounds, and then has the triple double afterwards. It's almost incomprehensible.
Here's something I have to say, and our listeners are primarily Jazz fans, and so I feel like we really have to speak to them, because you have a lot of people who are not a LeBron fan, and the thing that they go after is the number of titles won. And that seems to be, well, he can't be one of the greatest because he has a losing record in the finals. Even still, I think you'll hear some of that. But on the flip side of that, you have people who are saying the greatest power forward was Karl Malone. The greatest point guard was John Stockton. However, if you look at their finals record,
0-2.
Yep.
You can't have it both ways.
Agree more.
If you want to sit there and say that Carl and John were the best at their positions, or that they were the best duo, or this or that, you can't sit there and use the number of titles against LeBron, because you look at everything else in his body of work and it is just amazing.
Well, and if titles were a measuring stick, then there's one player in NBA history that trumps everybody.
Oh, and
it's
don't.
Bill Russell.
Yep, it's Bill Russell.
He's only got a bunch of 6'4" chain smoking white guys.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's why I said you can't go off of championships alone, because Bill Russell won more championships as a player than anyone in the history of the game, and
there
nobody's
are some
even
role players who have a lot of championships too.
But nobody's touched Russell, and I'm not sure anybody ever will touch Russell.
And if we're talking championships alone, then Robert Horry is greater than
yep. Michael Jordan. That's where I was going.
Right?
I think it boils down to basketball is ultimately a team game. And you can have the greatest player on the planet. That doesn't mean that you have the greatest team on the planet. Which kind of, I don't know, it's got me thinking a little bit about LeBron's legacy. And I think when you look at LeBron, there are two players that he's compared to more than anyone else. And that's Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan.
Yep.
And if you look at Kobe and Michael, as great as they were and how they did a good job of elevating the play of their teammates, they won 11 titles collectively, and they're in the pantheon of all-time greats. But I think Michael's and Kobe's ultimate legacy is, look what I did. Look what I did. It's about me. It's about my contributions. It's about my accomplishments. LeBron, to me, is cut from a different cloth. LeBron, to me, his legacy is, look what I did for us. Look what I did for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Look what I did for the Miami Heat. Look what I did for the city of Akron. Look what I did for Ohio. To me, I think for him, it's even bigger than basketball.
No, you and think about how many kids has he put through college, man?
Yeah.
The decision, people forget that. The decision raised how much money charity?
And I read an interesting piece, and I don't remember who wrote it over at ESPN, also about the friendship between Bron and Wade. And it was interesting, this last season, Wade got married, and LeBron took time out during the season and went to the wedding in Miami. And went to where he was unwelcome, because let's face it, he left Miami and Pat Riley still holds it against him. Spoelstra, I think, holds it a bit against him. And there's a few guys that weren't happy to see him, but he didn't care because he went to support a friend. And oh my gosh, heaven forbid two players on opposing teams be friends, because it's really not something that the NBA, and we've had veterans come out and say, oh, we don't look at it that should never be. We were never friends back in the day. But you look at it and he's unselfish. He doesn't care. And that's, I think he does care what other people think, but in the end he doesn't, because his friends and his family and the people he cares about come first. And that's pretty awesome too.
And I agree. And I think that's his ultimate legacy is, not only is he the best individual player on the planet, he's the best team player on the planet.
Yeah.
He makes every single person he plays with better. Like, this is a guy who made Zildrunas Augauskas and Mo Williams all-stars.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about Augauskas. Oh my gosh.
This is a guy that dragged the team to the finals that was giving Ira Neubel and Booby Gibson minutes. He makes every single person he plays with better. And I don't think you can say that about a lot of people.
Oh yeah, like there's a certain player that played on Golden State that he made better when he played in Cleveland.
Exactly. That's to me is his ultimate legacy. More than the four MVPs, more than the three rings and counting. I don't know if he wins another one. At this point, I don't really think it matters. But it's that he contributes in a way that nobody else has. And he makes the game of basketball better for everyone around him. And that to me is an incredible thing to do.
Now, we keep talking about legacy, so this is the last question I want to ask on our LeBron Love Fest.
Oh, I thought we were done already. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
This is the one thing I wanted to address, because we've talked about legacy. When you think about Michael Jordan, there are a few iconic moments. You think about the jump after he hit the shot, I believe it was against Cleveland in the playoffs.
Yep.
Craig, you know.
But perhaps no moment better.
Oh, don't say it.
I'm going to say it.
Don't
I'm
say
gonna
it.
I'm going to say it. And it was a push off, but I'm going to say it.
Oh, you're going to say it.
But the shot in Salt Lake City seems to be the summary of his great career.
The only thing that'll make this situation worse is to mention the year before a particular game.
For LeBron, though.
Yeah, that's his penultimate moment.
The block on Iggy, is that his moment?
I think so. I think especially when you consider, like, the ESPN, the sports science guys did a whole segment on it and just broke down, like, just how incredible it was that he blocked the shot at 11 and a half feet in the air, and at his max speed, he was going 20 miles an hour. And with like a couple milliseconds right before when Iggy catches the ball and goes up for the layup, he's 7 feet away from the basket. LeBron is 21 feet away. And when you consider all of those things, yeah, I think it might be the greatest defensive play in the history of the league, especially because if Iggy hits that, the Warriors have a 2-point lead with less than a minute left.
Right.
And for all intents and purposes, the game is over and the Warriors win.
And this is the reason I say that, because when we think about Jordan hitting that shot, that brings up a lot of pain for many Jazz fans.
And I think that this moment might bring up a lot of pain for Golden State fans going forward.
But more than that, can you imagine what that play will mean to someone 20 years from now when they're describing to their kids when LeBron brought the championship back home,
right?
Can you imagine what that play is going to be?
And by the way,
those people, that it's amazing to me.
Well, especially when you consider Cleveland sports history. I mean, you have the drive, the blown save, you have the bug game where the Indians were playing the Red Sox and they blew the game because of the infestation of bugs. Like, this is a city that's been plagued with such terrible luck. So you have all these, you know, the drive and all of this, and now you get to add the block.
I was
trumped it all.
And like, I was going to say something. You mentioned all the parts about that play, but there's one thing you didn't mention that I went back. If you have not gone back and rewatched this, LeBron was beelining for Curry to begin with. I don't know if anybody realized that. LeBron was locked into Curry, because he expected Curry to do his patented pull up and hit a three. And there wouldn't have been anything wrong with that, because that's right there. But
that's a
he took a beeline for Curry, and then his ability to watch Curry and anticipate where Curry was going to go, and the anticipation of the pass to Iggy. And then, like you said, being 15 feet away, 20 feet, 25 feet away, to then change that beeline straight for Iguodala. Unprecedented. I've never witnessed ever a play like that in all of my basketball watching ever.
And just one more thing, legacy talk that just kind of popped in my head that I'm thinking about now. When it comes to I think we've established that LeBron is the total package. And I think moving forward, when you see a guy who's this genetic freak and has just physical capabilities, from now on he's going to be compared to LeBron James, or at least I'm going to compare this guy to LeBron James. And I think that's the same way mentally. You're not going to find a guy with a higher basketball IQ. So not only is he this physical specimen who everyone is going to get compared to, he's a mental specimen as well.
Agreed. Completely agreed. That's a good way to cap off our conversation. There's a final segment we always put in. We always do this with guests, and I'm going to do this here with you. And I gave you some prep time for this. Your favorite all-time movie and your favorite all-time TV show, go.
Favorite all-time TV show? Probably Breaking Bad. I know it's cliche, but it's so, so good. And I was sick a couple of years ago. I had pneumonia of all things, and I sat down and I watched the entire series in like this crazy binge watch, and it was mind blowing to me, and I still think it's brilliant in the writing, and now I got to watch Better Call Saul, which is pretty phenomenal in and of itself. So Breaking Bad, although South Park's up there for me too, because I think it's the most brilliant satire of all time.
Dropping a little South Park. Nice.
I love South Park, man. I'm 31 years old going on 12, and fart jokes are always going to make me laugh. And you mix that in with pop culture and just making fun of everything, and I'm going to be a fan. And my all-time favorite movie is a movie that I describe as the perfect movie, and it's Shawshank Redemption. Again, I know a little cliche, but it's just perfect, man. It's so good.
You know what? Knowing you, like I've gotten to know you when we play ball and just our conversations, casual conversations, that one doesn't surprise me one bit.
It's so perfect.
No,
it's beautiful. It's like the ultimate redemption story, and it's smart, and every single performance is on point, and the writing is incredible, and you have Morgan Freeman as your narrator. You can't go wrong.
No, you can't. But like I said, just that's perfect. I love it. I love it.
Greg, you just brought something to my mind.
Uh-oh.
We need Morgan Freeman to narrate a documentary about this past finals.
Yeah, the Believe Land documentary. I'm
all for it. It's on my list on Netflix. I have not watched it yet. I expect they need a different ending now.
Oh yeah, there has to be some sort of like amendment to Believe Land now.
Now you've got.
I think it needs to be, and I just want a J.R. Smith reality show.
No. All right. So there we go. J.R. Smith reality. I could go with that. That would be actually, I would watch it. Sadly, I would watch it.
It's actually in production. They're calling it No Shirt, No Problem.
Don't.
Anything is possible.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right. Quickly, too.
Either that or we're calling it Pipe Dreams. One of the two.
Okay. All right. So quickly, one last thought. You, when we were talking basketball, you were talking about tell the folks what show you're watching right now. As you know, Better Call Saul was one. There was another one you mentioned that you're watching right now on TV. What's your favorite show out right now?
Okay, I'm drawing a blank, so you're gonna have to.
I can't remember. We were talking post basketball a couple weeks back. It was you, me, Zach, and I think Spencer was there, and we were talking about shows that people like to watch. And I think you mentioned that there's a show or two you've been watching recently, and I don't remember what it was.
I binge watched New Girl, and I kind of fell in love with that.
That was it. New Girl. That was
New Girl's great. It's hilarious. It's well done. Like the first, like I think like season 2 and 3 was kind of they were kind of figuring out what they wanted to do, but from there it's amazing. And I could watch that show all day.
No, I like New Girl as well. In fact, my wife and I used to sit and watch that together and just laugh. It's a good couples watching show, but there's nothing wrong with watching it single too. I mean, it's a good show. It's
exactly
fun.
Exactly how I feel, man. Like it's kind of like Seinfeld in that there's not really like a crazy plot or even like that big of a point. It's just funny, and it's a really wonderful way to like burn a couple hours. And Schmidt's an idiot, and I can watch Schmidt all day.
Sorry, Devin just got me laughing here because I said the whole couple watching and then singles, and Devin just gave me this look like, oh, sure, sure.
It is appreciated. We do have single listeners, I am sure.
I meant nothing bad by it. I really didn't.
We've taken Devin's up a lot of your time, Greg.
Devin can come to my house and watch New Girl.
Yes.
There you go.
Hey, Greg.
I'm totally with that.
We really appreciate you coming on. I know we've taken up a lot of your time. Go ahead and tell people where they can find you at on Twitter or where they can get your writings again. Let's just make sure that they can find you and find what you're doing.
So I'm, like I said, I'm on a little bit of a sabbatical right now from Purple and Blues, but I will be back sometime during the season, hopefully at the beginning of the season. And you can find me at Johnny Utah. That's Johnny_UT on the Twitters. And that's kind of it. That's okay. You know,
and people need to follow you.
Want to see a bunch of, you know, crappy food pics.
Yeah. If you're not following him, follow him. It'll be worth every minute.
And the pictures he posts are fantastic. I promise you are going to want to get in your car and drive somewhere beautiful.
And aside from basketball and aside from some of the other things we talked about, one of these days I'm going to sit and pick his brain about good food, because guys, folks, Greg knows good food. Greg knows very good food.
I spent a few years working in fine dining. So
there you go.
I know that sounds arrogant, but I like to think that I at least have at least decent taste. And I was raised in a family of cooks, and I'm really lucky that way. So yeah, if you ever have a food question, holler at me.
There you go.
I mean, I'm like almost 250 pounds. Like, you don't get to my size without, you know, trying a few things.
Oh, all right, Greg, thanks for joining us. Folks, hit him up on Twitter, follow him. Like I said, he's worth it. He's a great guy and someone I'm happy to call friend. So, thanks for joining us, folks. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs. Leave us a review. If you've enjoyed this show, we would love for you to leave us a review or hit us up on Twitter and Facebook, anywhere, and let us know what you thought. Give us your thoughts on some of the things we spoke about. It's jam packed tonight. So thank you all for joining us. We'll catch you again real soon. John's not here to take us out, so Devin, take us out.
Peace.